wish that I had never watched that video of the Mexican gangsters letting that pitbull chew off that guy's dick. I wish that I had never looked at that video, cause now that pitbull lives in my brain. Every night I feel him chewing on my brain stick again. Dream screaming, dream screaming, that's what happens when you're God's semen blasted into space. You grew your own face, and now you're trying to keep your cool. You know, you can feel the drool of the pitbull of time turning your crotch into gruel. It's the middle of the night, you're out of breath, trying to swipe left on death.
It's 5 a.m. I just made that song because I woke up screaming. This is the Duncan Trussell Family Hour Podcast, and we'll be right back. A tremendous thank you to Squarespace for sponsoring this episode of the DTFH, pitbullofTime.com. That domain name is available, and you can get it by going to squarespace.com. I don't need to remind you that we live in the most incredible time period in human history if you want to start selling stuff. In the old days, you'd have to rent a space or actually build something out of wood and brick, and then you put your stuff in a window, and before you knew it, the glass would be broken in the window, and dudes with ski masks on would come in and drag you from behind the counter and stomp your face to a bloody pulpy mash, and then you'd have to become a vigilante with a ruined pulped face and hunt them down until you'd killed all of them. But then a corrupt police sergeant who'd paid those guys to break into your place because you weren't paying the right protection fee would put you on death row, and you'd end up being executed, and then you'd go to hell, and you would burn in hell forever. But thank God for Squarespace, because now you can build your shop online, and you can do it in minutes. Squarespace has everything you need. They've got award-winning templates that you can mix and match and customize. They have an incredible mass mailing function now. I've tried it. It's wonderful. They've got amazing customer support, and of course, they give you the ability to take PayPal and credit cards and make money selling the things that you create, including your stinky socks. And I know someone who sells her socks online, and she does very well with her business. So head over to squarespace.com/Duncan and give them a try. When you're ready to launch, use offer code Duncan, and you will get 10% off your first order of a website or a domain. That's squarespace.com/Duncan. Use offer code Duncan and you will get 10% off your first order of a website or a domain, and that includes pitbullofTime.com, which at this moment is waiting there for you like some delicious golden fruit hanging from a beautiful tree in the center of the Garden of Eden. Thank you, Squarespace. Pals, I'm going to be at the Denver Comedy Works downtown January 23rd to the 25th. I'm going to be at the Bell House in Brooklyn, New York, February 6th and February 7th and 8th. I'm going to be at the Arlington Draft House. All the links you need to get tickets for those shows are going to be at DuncanTrussell.com. If you want to take that sweet, deep dive down in the darkest, deepest, dankest, holiest, most sacred waters of the DTFH, if you've wondered what it's like to lay in a kiddie pool full of saints' tears, then head over to patreon.com/DTFH and subscribe. You're going to get commercial-free episodes of the DTFH, access to our beautiful, active, vibrant Discord server community, and also you get at least an hour-long extra rambling thing from me every month. Hopefully more than that. Probably more than that. I want to ramble more. I want to talk. I love to yap. Head over to patreon.com/DTFH and subscribe. We also have a shop located at DuncanTrussell.com with so many beautiful ancient artifacts and weird rings that we've taken from sacred sites and tombs. Some people are like, hey man, I don't think it's legal for you to be disinterring corpses and stealing their clothes and selling them at your shop. And my answer to them is, then do something about it. Come at me, bro. Prove it. You can find all kinds of amazing stuff. We got old muddy boots and bags of denture creams and dentures. We got big clumps of stinky hair and oiled down beaver balls. They're all there at DuncanTrussell.com. All you got to do is click on the shop. Today's guest's got a great new special that Bill Burr helped him produce. It's called Ian Talk. Ideas not worth spreading. He does stand-up all over the country. If you have never seen him do stand-up, just don't listen. Just go online, watch some of his clips, and then come back. He's a brilliant writer, a brilliant comic, and an amazing human being. Everybody, please welcome to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast, Ian Edwards. Ian, thank you so much for coming to do my podcast, man.
My pleasure, fam.
Can you really not swim?
Nah, can't swim. Can't,
that's 100% sure you can't swim.
Like, I was just thinking about that the other day. So I don't even know how you know I can't swim, but I definitely can't swim, which is one black stereotype, but then...
It's online.
It's online. That's hilarious.
It's online that you can't swim. Isn't that weird? Everything about you.
Damn.
Exists in the world. I wish I was, for a second, I had this awful thing. I'm like, maybe I'll tell him I'm telepathic. That's how insecure I am. I wish I knew that.
I would have believed you.
I wish I knew it as a No. It's just one of the things that popped up. I was thinking, like, whoa, man, why don't you learn?
I might. Oh, I know. So I did. Yeah, I can't swim, but I wanted to double down and not being able to swim at first, and then now I might learn how to swim, and then while I'm learning how to swim, maybe have some jokes about it. But right. While I can't, like, I'll clown the fact that I can't proudly.
Cool.
And double down on it. And then when I can, or when I'm learning, it'll be something fun to learn.
Yeah.
I want to leave some shit for me to learn.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's the attitude, right? Yeah. Like, I have a whole list of shit I'm mm-hmm. still afraid to talk about on stage.
Oh, right.
That's so cool, the thing like that. You're like, mm-hmm. No, this is like magnificent material mm-hmm. for your art form.
Yeah,
you know? Because
yeah.
Good God almighty, what a vulnerable position to be in, man. Not being able to swim these days. Not being able to, like, in any time period in human history, not being able to swim is bad.
Right.
But during, like, whatever this time period is, climate change or whatever, you got to learn to swim. You got to learn fast.
Yeah, probably. But before, I'm like, fuck that. I'm not learning. I tried when I was a kid. It didn't take. So I just, like, left it alone.
You're like probably in a past life, you were probably a sailor or something, because that was a thing. Did you know that sailors would intentionally not learn to swim?
Why?
Because when you're out in the middle of the ocean and your ship goes down, what are you going to do? Tread water?
So they just would rather drown.
Rather drown. Mm-hmm. In fact, they would swim down. Like, that was something that sailors would just, if their ship went down, they would just, all right, see you guys later, and swim down.
Yeah, let's end this fast.
Yeah, because sharks would eat you up.
Eat you alive.
Yeah, sharks
would just drown. Drowning is one of my greatest fears for somebody that doesn't know how to swim. But maybe it is one of my greatest fears because I don't know how to swim.
Do you buy into past life stuff?
Yeah.
When did you start contemplating the idea that you don't just incarnate once?
When I was a kid, and there used to be like these tragedies, like natural disasters, and like kids or young people would die in masses, I'd be like, if there's a God, you know, which back then I was Christian, there's no way he wouldn't give these people another chance to do it again. You know what I mean? I was like, this, like, you know, when you grow up Christian, when you're 13, before you're baptized or you're christened, which is a version of baptism.
What, you're Catholic?
Nah, but it's the Church of England,
okay,
which is Pentecostal, which is Catholic, but they just wanted to have their own power.
Sure.
Aside from the Catholic Church.
You mean Episcopalian?
No,
that's how I was raised, Episcopalian.
Well, I guess it's Pentecostal.
Okay.
Or Church of England or
Episcopalian. Okay.
I don't exactly know what Episcopalian is.
It's a similar thing. It's like Catholicism light.
Yeah, there it is. So it's like that. So then you're christened, and then your parents or your guardians, like, I have control of your soul or whatever until you're like 13, when you can be confirmed, and then you're like, if you died, and then you can, that you can be judged by God, you know, however they had it planned out in their religion.
What does it mean, confirmed? I hear that. What does that mean? Like, you're a confirmed Christian?
Yeah, confirmation is like, now you accept God at the age of 13 as your Lord and Savior.
Yeah.
And then you, every Sunday in church, when they have a communion, you get the blood of Christ, which is wine, and the wafer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that, but means, before that, you don't get to eat it.
Nah, before that, no body of Christ or blood of Christ.
So you're saying, during this time, you didn't believe in reincarnation? I mean, it's not a typical Christian.
No, it's like afterwards, right? I was like, I used to wonder, so what happens? So now I'm confirmed. If I die, I go to heaven. That's what they say.
Yeah.
Right? Because I've accepted. So, but what happens to the people who die before they were old enough to accept God? Like, it's like, would they just go to hell? You know what I mean? It's like, that wouldn't be fair. So they must reincarnate.
Limbo.
Right.
Isn't it limbo? Isn't that the idea? There's some intermediary state between heaven and hell where all the unconfirmed, unbaptized children who died in the womb folks just hang out eternally.
But then they'll just be there forever. That's stone cold. So I feel like reincarnation is the only answer. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it does seem pretty logical. I mean, it's like it's either that or like annihilation, right? It's got to be like, because even if there was some paradise, if you were in that paradise perpetually in some unchanging state, wouldn't that gradually devolve into like a hell realm or something? Wouldn't you get bored? So bored, not dying.
I don't know. Like, I wonder if there is a threshold for fun. Like, every fun I've ever had has always ended. So it would be, I'm willing to find out if there's a threshold for fun. If there's like, man, I don't want to have any more fun. I'd like to have that problem.
Yeah, me too. Well, I there's those famous like forms of epilepsy or something that cause you to have like 10-hour orgasms. Have you heard of this shit?
Oh.
Yeah, it's like, I think I saw a story on it, and this woman committed suicide. Because it was having an orgasm.
Yeah.
What's the longest you've ever come?
Less than a minute.
Oh, yeah. It usually lasts, it's quick, man.
Right.
I don't mean the longest, for me, that's the longest I've ever had sex, but I'm just sorry, dumb, easy joke. But like the longest, you know what I'm saying? Like, if you were to extend an orgasm by 10 minutes,
right?
I think 4 minutes in.
Right. But I'm thinking not even orgasm, I'm thinking like euphoria. But I've seen like a documentary or something on a woman or several people that can't control, they just keep coming or having orgasms and they can't work and shit like that.
Yeah.
And that is miserable.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is miserable.
Embarrassing.
Yeah, embarrassing and miserable. They're afraid to go out because they don't know if they're just going to come or have an orgasm in front of people. So yeah, that's got to be, it sounds cool, but yeah, it's not.
Whoever dates them is like, was that me? Or did you have a seizure?
Is that me or him? Like, focus here.
Yeah, yeah. What are you doing coming looking at that?
Yeah, looking at that guy.
Yeah. And then everyone you meet, like, is going to, unless they're like really hyper compassionate, they're going to probably do like this weird little giggle that you've heard so many times. And you're like, you don't understand. I'm in hell. Oh my God. I'm in hell. You know,
also, does that mean we don't have sex later now?
Yeah.
You know, are you tired of orgasm all day?
Right.
So are we, it's just a weird realm to be in with a person.
It would destroy your life. Yeah. It's like so much of a human's life rotates, orbits around orgasm, whether you want to admit it or not. So much of it is like that, having that moment in your week or day. Mm-hmm. And then once that gets fucked up, what a nightmare. But yeah, okay, other things. Let's think of like, what's the most...
Start hating one of the greatest feelings ever. People have diseases or illnesses or, you know, like, say, celiac disease or whatever, and whatever the symptoms are.
What's celiac?
I think it's something to do with gluten or some shit.
Oh, yeah. You know? Okay. Yeah, yeah.
Right? But what if you have like that, just the last thing on the orgasm thing, you have something that people don't take serious. So that's another level of it. Like, you're having an orgasm. How bad could it be? And you're and then so then now, like, celiac disease or cancer or something, other people can sympathize with you. Yeah. But you're just a person. You're just a guy who comes all the time and is bitching about it. That's another level of terror to it.
Oh, really? Do you come all the time? When I shit, my asshole falls out every time. Yeah, man. Yeah. I mean, that's the problem with any kind of pleasure-based disease. Like, for example, think of like...
Pleasure-based disease.
Yeah.
It's a pleasure. What do you have? I have a pleasure-based disease.
Yeah.
And people are like, what?
What are you even talking about?
Yeah. How dare you call it a disease?
You know, like, think of like the most famous person you know. And like, you know what I mean? Like, by now, you've met people who are like super global superstars, man. And just think about how if you get to know people, you know, then you realize the amount of like their day-to-day experience is universally coveted. And yet from their POV, a lot of times they're in a weird, not so great dream sometimes, you know? But they can't bitch about it. Is there anything worse than hearing a hyper successful person bitch about it? And like, how many fucking songs? I don't know how many weird songs, hip hop. I've heard so many different songs that have within it some kind of like honest appraisal of this hell trap they've gotten themselves caught in because they're too fucking talented and charismatic and now they're in, there's no way out.
Right.
You know, that's another version of the orgasm problem.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it is another. And even talking about it, I still don't feel sorry for some people because everybody's like, well, if I'm in that position, I will enjoy it more than you are. There's something wrong about you that's ruining this for you. And I'm not like that. So this is your fault.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
That's the dream. That's what we hope. Yeah. We hope they're damaged goods. We hope that the famous people are bitching about all the, you know, I was listening, some Kanye song where he's like, and then my wife was telling me one of his cousins ripped him off. Like,
oh, yeah, I know that song. Yeah.
And you listen to it and you're like, all right, but really, you know, like but then like, if you just think about that, shit, man, that's betrayal in your own family. And now you can't trust people. And you're also a fucking genius, but also he's like publicly mentally ill. You know, and so then... Whoa.
So then you're like, that's just Kanye. He's mentally ill and talented.
Yeah.
So that's why he's having issues with fame.
What do you think? Do those two things go hand in hand, or it's one a byproduct of the other?
Well, I think he has some form of mental illness, but his ego is also bananas. I don't even know if you count the size of his ego as his form of mental illness, or it's two separate things that are good and bad.
Yeah.
You know, like, but he's definitely not normal.
No.
Yeah.
Like,
which is nothing wrong with that, but it's definitely not normal.
Have you, like, it seems to me, I remember Mitzi said this to me about when I was the talent coordinator. And I don't remember which comedian it was that had like done some crazy shit, but some comedians are always doing the craziest shit, man. Being on that side of the fence, you get a firsthand view of just how insanely self-destructive comedians are.
Right, right.
You know, at least a few times a month, a comic would call up and be like, this is what I want you to tell Mitzi. Tell her to fuck herself. Tell her I hope she dies and tell her she's a witch. And I would, you know, you'd have to be like, okay. Okay. And then, of course, you would never do that. Because within a week, you know, they're calling in spots again.
Right.
But
it's hilarious.
Some comedian had freaked out, which is, you know, usually happening over there to some small degree or a major degree. And she was like, everybody goes crazy, honey. And she meant like when a comedian starts getting in the updraft, things get incredibly wonderful for them because it's like, Jesus Christ, they've worked so hard for this. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, you have had an amazing career. You have been a writer on some like on many hit shows. You have been a producer. You just had this like you know, you work fucking hard, man. But now you're hitting this.
I would say I have an amazing, amazing mediocre career, which is
amazing.
Which is, but I would add the word mediocre. Amazing to it.
It is amazing. I mean, your credits are insane, man. Right. You've done so much work, and like, yeah, I know what you mean. Like, are you? I don't know. Will Ferrell?
No.
No. Are you? No. But you've been working out here, man, right. And that's it's the most competitive in it.
Right, and I could say I'm not Will Ferrell, and I can say I'm not sure Will Ferrell has had as much fun as me, and I'm sure he's had fun.
Right.
So then, like, I measure shit, like, on fun more than cash. You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
Like fun is, like, has to be a big part of it.
Right.
So there is also a fear of getting to a certain level and finding out you can't have fun at that level.
Oh.
So I'm like, I kind of want to make, I'm kind of leery of certain things if there's no guaranteed fun there. You know what I'm saying? Oh, I'm trying to make sure. Like, how is this going to be fun?
Right. Like, you don't want to get backed into some dark corner or something that. You don't want your success to end up locking you in some...
in some shit that's not going to be fun or healthy.
You mean like becoming like a series regular on a show you don't like, or like... what do you mean by that? What would that look like?
I don't know. I just, like, I was just talking, say, well, I guess there's a lot of successful comics who are happy. Like, Joe's happy. Russell seems happy.
Yeah.
Yeah. But then I've seen the ones that are successful and not happy. So I'm not sure if it's them or it's fame. You know what I mean? Or success. You know, it's hard to tell.
I don't know. So, I mean, I want to find out. Yeah, that's for sure. I wouldn't mind finding out. Listen, if like that's the way I go out is some level of insanity brought on by some like, you know, reaching some career altitude. Fuck it. I was just watching this documentary. It's, it's a good way to die.
I want to be in control. That's what I'm. That's my thing.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So then that's why. Yeah.
You want to be in control.
Yeah. When you were saying your answer, I was realizing why I said what I said. And I was like, it must be, I just want to be in control. I hate not being in control. You know what I mean?
Oh. So what, like, so you mean like you hate being in an airplane, not being in control? Or you
I can deal with because you get conditioned to that. But just, like, I didn't do drugs for a long time because I didn't want to be out of control. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't want to have a career that was... like I was dependent on some substance.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
But then when I did do it, I was like, I enjoyed and accepted like the loss of control.
Right.
And how much fun it was. But I'm still the type of person that wants control over how I feel. And maybe I'm trying to get, and I kind of do want to get rid of that. But it's still there.
The desire to be in control.
Yeah, that, yeah. Gotta without go to even dominatrix. Knowing. Say,
go to dominatrix. I know, a good one. She will fix the problem.
She will fix it. You know what's crazy about that? You're right. But I would never go, but you're fucking right.
Of course you wouldn't. You like to be in control.
Yeah.
You know, it's therapeutic, though, to some degree. I mean, a lot of, like, that's what, at least, I interviewed her.
That is Mistress, so true.
Mistress Justine Cross. I interviewed her, and she was, you know, without, you know, exposing anybody, she's like, the thing they say about really powerful people going to dominatrixes, that's 100% true. Like, the people who really want to be in control, they're tortured by it so much that going to a place where they're tied up and like whipped.
The most humiliating things happen to them.
They have to walk around and like, you know, like beg and suck her feet and stuff. And like for them, that's like a massage.
It's freeing.
Like, it's a vacation.
A relaxation. I went to a clown class once. So that was when I lost control.
So those are serious. I don't think people realize how serious clown, like the philosophy of clowning is. How long was this class?
It was like 7 weeks.
Damn.
Seven weeks on a Sunday, like for like 2 or 3 hours.
What's the name of the class?
I forgot, it was like a while ago, but it was like in this strip mall upstairs, like maybe Highland and Sunset. And, you know, I went because I wanted to be a better comic. So I was like, all right, so I'm thinking they're going to teach you like movement and shit like that. But it was just the whole thing. So when I went there, it wasn't like them teaching you movement. It's them trying to make you let go, let you let yourself go.
Right.
So that then you'd create movement and not care how you looked, what people thought about you when they saw you. So then that was like, it wasn't what I thought I wanted, but it was exactly what I needed.
That's cool. You know what I mean? Yeah, you can't be in control of not being in control.
Yeah.
You have to be fully, I guess, like, you just have to hang it up for a second, see what happens.
Yeah, at least for the class, yeah.
Well, man, one of the things I love about your stand-up is the, man, I feel like I am out of control with stand-up. I feel like my levels are all off. In general in life, my levels are always, like, spinning. The dials are off. And I've come to terms with it to some degree.
That's great.
But I love your stand-up, man. Mm-hmm. And I love the way that you kill but maintain this, like, deep calm up there. That's so cool to watch. Because, you know, that to me is that's a disciplined, clearly a choice that you've made to be that way. And it's beautiful. But is that related to you wanting to be in control when you're working out your, when you're working out your material and your set, and when you're like up there, is it some kind of regimented, disciplined way that you approach the craft?
Now, it might be both me letting go and not being in control, and both being in control, because there's other ways to do comedy, but they might not suit me. So the way I do comedy is like, I do comedy the way I am, and I can't be afraid of who I am. So I'd like to be an animated comic, but I'm not. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I know I've seen animated comics kill and shit like that.
Yeah.
So now I have to trust and stay me and be free enough. The only way I can kill like an animated comic is to let go and completely be me.
Right.
So then it could take my laughs to that level.
Otherwise it's phony, right?
Or otherwise it's phony, it's not going to work, and I'm just being a fake crazy person. So it does help. The way I do comedy does help me be loose and be me. You know what I mean?
Yeah. This I don't know of. I mean, I guess because like being on stage is a compressed version of your life or something. And so, you know, like if you're going to become phony in your life or whatever, you can kind of water it down over the days and maybe maybe not even be so aware of what a fucking phony you are or something, you know? But on stage, goddamn, that's the shittiest feeling, man. Have you ever experimented with that? Like, where you see a comic and you see someone, and you know that is not the kind of comedy I do.
Right.
But you decide to try it out. Not stealing the material. You know what I mean?
Like, you're growing up as a comic, I've tried. There's been so many versions of me on stage, you know? And then the only way I get caught out now, it's like, because sometimes we can go adrift from ourselves, but then like I'll see like a clip of Chappelle online, or I saw his last special, and then like, oh shit, that's what I'm. Then I'm like, oh, that's what I'm forgetting to do. Like, I thought I was connecting, but watching him or just somebody else at the time reminds you, oh, that's what you're not doing that you're supposed to be doing that you were doing, and then you went adrift from it. So now come back to that.
You mean connecting?
Connecting and just like being my honest self. I guess that's what I mean.
Yeah.
Because sometimes I can pretend to be me. You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
And then I get caught up in that and I'm thinking it's working. But then you see somebody really being themselves and you're like, fuck, I'm pretending to be me. So this seeing this person be themselves is a reminder for me to find back my base so that I can connect to it and just generate 100% me. You know what I mean?
Yes. When I was a talent coordinator, young comedian, getting shitty spots, desperate for Mitzi's approval, but knowing that I couldn't bring up, she knew I wanted to be a comic. You can't bring it up to her because she'd get pissed. You can't, like, you know what I mean? You got to do your job.
It's so funny.
But I can remember at one point, you know, and you just want any her to give you any acknowledge, anything. Mm-hmm. And she knew that about comics.
Right.
So she knew that, like, tormenting you in that way would give you ambition and make you try harder, maybe. But I remember at one point I said to her, like, yeah, Mitzi, you know, I just want to find my voice. Because when you're coming up as a comic, that's the thing you hear a lot. You'll find your voice one day as a comic. Mm-hmm. I just want to find my voice on stage. She goes, what happened? Did you lose it? It was such a deep thing to say because it's like, who are you then?
Right.
How do you not have that? And yet this brilliant thing you said about faking yourself.
Yeah, yeah, I've done that.
Oh, me too.
Yeah.
God, that's the most confusing form of fakery there is.
Yeah, exactly.
You're lifting from a form. You're lifting from a form of version of yourself.
Yeah, and you don't. You're so deep in, you don't even know until it hits you, and you're like, "Oh shit."
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not that person anymore. Yeah. That's not me.
Yeah.
Now you're fucked because you have to jump off the ledge again. You have to like go back.
And you're like, I thought when I jumped off the first time, everything was complete, and then you realize, oh, I'm going to have to keep on jumping and keep on. This never ends. You know what I mean?
It's a never ending series of cliffs.
Yeah, yeah.
That you always have to jump off until you die.
Until you die.
And that's the final fucking cliff.
Yeah.
But all those jumps. So this is what clown school taught you, is that you have to be out of control to be yourself.
Yeah.
Is that what it means?
It taught me to not care what people think of me, because you do silly things. Like, it's like so much improv. Like today they put us in a group, 5 people, and the rest of the class is over here. So you guys are going to sing a song about this. So make up a chorus. So the group makes up a chorus, but then everybody has to do a solo and step forward.
Whoa.
So then the solo is whatever comes out of your mouth. Then you step back with the group, you do the chorus, and somebody steps out. So this is like, what the fuck am I gonna sing? You just told us this 1 minute ago.
Yeah.
But you gotta open your mouth and make words come out and sing. You know what I mean? In front of the rest of the class. Whoa. So it just, you gotta be open.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You have to go somewhere you wouldn't, where in stand up, like, I know what I'm gonna say. That's the beauty of a new joke. It's like, when you have jokes that you know are going to work, you're comfortable and you can say them. But it's the new joke that you're going to throw into the is the monkey wrench. It's the one you're not going to say right.
Yeah.
It's the one that's going to make you feel uncomfortable for the set. It's the one that might derail the whole set. Then you have to figure out a way after, if it doesn't work, how to get back on track with the rest of the shit. So then that's why a lot of comics hate trying new shit.
Yep.
And they get stuck. And then, so I never want to be a comfortable comic.
Because
if I'm comfortable, then I'm not growing. So I always want to, like,
jump off the cliff.
Jump off the cliff. Yeah. Now just I'm a cliff jumper, like by profession. You know.
Wow. Cool. Yeah. Oh my God, man. There was a time, a long period. This is why I stopped doing stand up for a while, because I realized.
How many times have you stopped doing stand up?
Probably the 2 big times. Like the last time was the longest, where I was in New York. Right. I was watching these fucking New York comics crush it.
Uh-huh.
I didn't want to be on stage.
Right.
I didn't like what I was saying on stage.
Right.
But it's because I had like pretended there wasn't a cliff.
Right.
I'd camped out on the cliff. You know, I'd like made a house next to the cliff, and then I moved into the house and I was like, what a great view of this wonderful cliff.
Uh-huh.
And then somewhere in there, your soul just dies because
you're like, what
am I doing here?
Yeah.
Why? You got to jump off the cliff.
Yeah.
P.S. gang, don't literally jump off a fucking cliff. This is a metaphor.
Yeah.
But like, the moment you finally do the thing.
Uh-huh.
You finally break out of the trap of your old self. I mean, somebody told me that if a snake doesn't shed its skin, it dies.
Right.
It gets its snake skin entangles in the
mm-hmm.
in the forest floor, I guess, and it just dead meat, you know? Like, if you don't recycle yourself, you're fucked. But
right.
that feeling of being up there like some kind of animatronic thing, just, and then I'll do that, and then I'm not that.
Which is funny because I've seen comics kill. I've watched comics die while they kill, because they're doing the same shit all the time and they're not taking any chances. Like, you're stopping yourself because you want to get these laughs and you want to guarantee you have a good set. And I was like, you could be getting so much more out of this, but you have no idea. So you're dying, you're stagnating. You're like a snake that doesn't want to, like, lose, you know, like, you want to keep that skin.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And it's, I've seen it too. I've done it.
And I've done it too. Yeah. I've done it.
Ooh, it hurts. Yeah. And I have compassion now when I see comics doing it, because it's like, I know what you're in.
Mm-hmm.
I know as you were driving over here how you felt. I know. It's a fucked feeling, man. And, you know, but then there's different, isn't there other schools of thoughts here? Like Seinfeld, I've seen him do interviews where he's like, no.
Right.
You do the material that works. That's what you do. He like seems like and he's great.
Right.
And his analysis of this thing that I saw, and I might be misinterpreting, it's been a while, but it was really funny. He was like, I think he was calling the other thing art comics. You know, like, you know, there's these comics who do new material or whatever, but it's like, let's just.
So what does he think about Chris Rock, who's one of his best friends?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Because that's a completely different philosophy.
His philosophy is like, I mean, look at his stand-up. It's technical, precise. It's like, I saw him in the main room.
Right.
I can't get out of my fucking... You know how like when you... The longer you do comedy, when you see someone like him, you're looking at literally every step, every movement, everything.
Right.
And like, he came out and did some Charlie Chaplin shit with a mic stand.
Oh, right.
He did a little like spinneroo or something. I don't even know what it was. Some weird, like, you know what I mean? Like a fluid, graceful... thing, just like it's, and then puts it behind him. Chappelle does the same thing.
Oh, right.
He like does a, when I've seen him, I don't know if he does all the time, but the times I've seen it, it's like he lifts the mic up and does like Thor's hammer, like the doom.
Oh, yeah, I've seen that.
You know, yeah, that thing. You know, when you look at comics like that, anyway, Seinfeld, I don't know. My feeling is I like jumping off the cliff now.
Right.
I would get bored as fuck if I had to always do the same shit. Not to say I'm not going to do old stuff on the road coming up, Denver.
That's hilarious.
You know,
I wanted to ask you something about your comedy. I know you're interviewing me, or we're just talking, but like the you I've been seeing on stage is fucking hysterical.
Thank you.
And I'm like, what happened? Not that nothing was before, but like if I'm on the outside looking at you and the way you've talked on your podcast and how is he going to combine this spirituality and this knowledge that he has with comedy, or when people listen to the podcast, how do they, it's like being on a TV show and you're one character and they come to see at the club and you're this other person. How do you combine it so that the people who hear you from the podcast come to the club and they're satisfied because they get what they thought they would get, or how do you not give them? So I was like, this is a job right here that you have. I mean, I was like, how are you going to figure this out?
Yeah.
That's just me thinking of you.
Yeah, man.
Without even asking you.
That's a great question.
And then be like, so how is he going to do this?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, one thing is like, I had to come to a real, like, you know, you just have to know the answer to your question is really boring.
No, really. Cause I feel like,
I mean, the answer is boring. The question's great.
Right.
The answer is boring because the answer is just like, what happened is I realized like, you got to write new material, man.
Right.
And if you're going to write new material, you better write jokes about things that you're interested in.
Right.
And then it's so obvious and dumb, but it's like that thing we were talking about before, the weird like ego paralysis or whatever that overtakes you, that gradually destroys you, you know. What ends up happening is you're caught in time, and the shit you're saying is like you're in a time loop or something. And then I just started writing again and like, you know, paying more attention to like classic comics, or like, you know, watch Argus in the Main Room
and
see this beautiful old school stand-up style. Right. And these are not clean jokes, but you know what I mean? Like the geometry.
The foundation. It's basic math. I'm not calling it August basic, but it's all the foundations of comedy that you need to build. They're the building blocks of comedy. That's watching them and you need them to create.
That's it. That's it, yeah, man. Yeah. And like just basic shit like that. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, trying to figure out like how to structure jokes in a way that's like, and then also to work into, oh, what am I interested in?
Yeah.
I'm interested in conspiracy theories. I'm, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? I'm interested in Buddhism and uh-huh. I'm still working on that right now.
Right.
But one thing I know I don't like mm-hmm. is when I see fucking comics or it doesn't appeal to me. Any comedian that's on stage and is like doing great.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. What a fucking miracle that you figured you got that far. So I don't mean to sound like a hater or whatever, but
right.
I personally don't like, I am a spiritual person and right. I want the world to be a great place.
Right.
And I want love to reign forever. And I want people to find themselves and open up to their hearts. And,
right.
And I want joy to reign supreme forever throughout the planet and the universe forever.
Right.
But I don't know how to make that funny.
Right.
And if you're going to skip making that funny and just get on stage and say that, that's great.
Right.
But it might not be comedy. That's another thing.
Right.
You know what I mean? So I don't want to like, I would rather be mm-hmm. myself. It's just what you're saying. Like, I don't know how to put it, man. But for me.
But I just feel like you figured it out. But
I
know you, it was a task. Because first you were dunking the comic. And then this is my assessment of your progression. First you're dunking the comic. You have your material. Then you start growing spiritually. And then you have this material. But you can't really use it no more.
No.
Because it doesn't match the people who. So then you have to figure out that. And I'm like, good luck figuring that out.
Yeah, no
I'm
shit.
Like good luck. And then to see you figure it out, it's like, oh shit.
Thanks, man.
You figured it out. That's great. It's perfect. Like, this matches.
Thanks, man.
Like, you caught up with you. It's like, you know, because you're jumping off a cliff as a human being, as a soul, your material has to do the same thing. And there's different cliffs. It's like, man, that's some shit.
Yeah, it's fun. Yeah. What a joy. By the way, if you, this is like, mm-hmm. there's a saying in the Bhagavad Gita. Mm-hmm. It's better to be an honest street sweeper than a dishonest king. And mm-hmm. then there's another saying in the Bhagavad Gita that I like, which is, you know, it's, and it's a Viking thing too. The mm-hmm. idea is like, it's better to die in battle.
Right.
Than to die rich son of a bitch.
Right.
And you know what I mean? Comfortable. That's why all the great myths, it's like, if you die in battle, that's incredible.
Right.
And as a comic, I think would you say our battle is writing new material?
Yeah.
And if we die in that pursuit mm-hmm. by bombing,
mm-hmm.
it's better than killing with our old shit.
Yeah. Because I've been miserable. People say, that was a great set. And I know I punked out of doing the new joke that I wanted to try because I wanted to match the last comic's level of killing in the room. So I didn't get anything out of the set growth-wise. So this is technically this is a spiritual bomb, or this is a spiritual comedy bomb. Wow. This killing was, I drove down here to do the shit that I knew would work, and I wrote this other joke. I didn't even try it. I skipped out of everything and I punked out. Like, this is not, I just stagnated my growth. I just held onto my snake skin. So this is why I have this look on my face while you're smiling at me, telling me, great set. It's like, fucked up.
See, you have identified, it's like a, you know, trees, mm-hmm. they get, I don't know, it's like a tree fungus for comics.
Ah, that's hilarious.
And what a dark trap too. Because your shit worked. You knew it worked.
Right.
But it's like the Comedy Store, in any good comedy club, that's that's a laboratory. And it's like, you're a scientist. You've been given access to this laboratory for 15. Like, imagine someone gives you access to SETI, you know, which mm-hmm. is really hard to get access to. They mm-hmm. can turn those satellites to tune into specific other galaxies to listen to sounds. Uh-huh. And you turn the shit at the moon. You know what I mean? It's like, what are you doing? You know, there's nothing up there.
Yeah.
You know, and you keep turning it to the moon.
Right.
Getting the same results, you know? But also, I do think there's something to be said mm-hmm. for respecting the audience too.
Right.
Meaning, if you're, and that's the, to me, the real weird dance you have to do, which is like, also, people got babysitters.
Mm-hmm.
you can't just get up there and do, you know, pour shit into weird beakers right. and nothing, and it all fizzles.
Right.
You need a couple of like bangs.
Yeah, yeah. You mix it up. You have your tried and true, but so you have to do some work that night, and you have to entertain. So you just mix it up. So they leave happy, and you leave happy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, and figuring that out, because like, you know, that's to me like. Though I do, you know, I've seen the greatest comics on planet Earth come into the OR with a piece of paper and get up there and eat shit.
Right.
Eat big bowls of shit. And I've always respected it.
Right.
Because I know they know that for the audience, they got to see the great comic.
Right.
And so there's already a gift happening. And I also know that all of us are in the back.
Mm-hmm.
Watching them bomb and like getting some dark pleasure out of me, you know what I mean?
So
like they bomb too,
right?
You know, but it's a weird thing to see that go down, which is like, okay, I know you needed to work on 10 jokes, but right. couldn't you have thrown in like one old classic right. or something?
Or there's a way to do it too. They could all bomb, but if you have something funny to say about the bomb and you made the set like this, I'm working out, but I'm going to entertain you when these jokes don't work, you know, just something, you know?
Yeah.
And I guess maybe at the store is safe too, because then there's going to be other comics afterwards.
Sure.
It's just
to clean up the mess.
To clean up the mess. Yeah. People entertain them before and more people will come on and entertain you afterwards.
Yeah.
And then some people like to see the growth of a joke. People don't get comedy.
Right.
They only judge it based on seeing you that one time. They don't know it's a whole thing.
Yeah.
So until they come back. Store has like a lot of repeat customers.
Yeah.
And then they'll be like, oh, I remember when that joke. And then you can see their appreciation now for it. So it's, you know, it just all depends.
Yeah, I love watching. I love just watching like, I was watching like Whitney Cummings.
Mm-hmm.
I watched her go through a joke cycle or whatever, and I watched it start with some joke. All her shit works because she knows how to make people laugh, but like watching it like crystallize and then watching the like trimming of this and that. It's pretty, that's what I love about the store is it's such a university, you know, where you really do watch. I'm slow at it though, man. I take forever to like work on material, but hey, man, we're talking.
Hey man, take your time. Fuck it.
Right.
Yeah.
But, let's jump away from comedy for a second, though I love talking about comedy with you, and get back into reincarnation.
Let's reincarnation. Let's do it.
Well, you know, it actually applies to comedy because you do reincarnate as a comic. You know, you have various incarnations as a comic. But what are your views on death, man? Do you have a sense that, like, are you afraid to die?
No, I'm not afraid to die. I'm afraid of how I die. I don't want to be uncomfortable. You know what I mean? I don't want it to be slow and painful, but I'm not afraid to die.
If you had to pick
how
to die, what would it
just
be?
Just in my sleep, painless. Just
dying in your sleep.
Yeah.
Everybody, I don't know, man. I've thought about that myself. I don't know if dying in your sleep's the best, man. I think that's like
Me neither. Just as long as it's painless.
But we all assume it's painless.
Yeah, I know. We do.
That's the problem is it's like just because they're not talking doesn't mean they're not in hell.
Right, exactly.
That's one of the creepiest things I heard is like they were giving lethal injection to this dude and it was not working. And he was saying, it's like I'm on fire.
Oh, shit.
You know, so I could think of like the deaths that I wouldn't want to have happen. Like I don't want to get eaten.
Yeah.
Something.
Yeah, I don't want to get eaten. I don't want to be on a plane that's going hurling down towards the water because I already can't swim. And now I got to be like just in the air.
Even if you survive.
Yeah, yeah.
But you could use your inflatable thing.
Yeah. Those work. Yeah.
Yeah.
Those work 100%.
Yeah. Well, they know. Yeah, that's a sad. All that does is make it so that it's easier to find the craft for all the corpses floating out there. Yeah,
exactly. That's all they want.
To find the craft, to get that black box, and hopefully like they're not fucked and the insurance company will cover it.
Yeah, that's all your flotation devices so that you can help them find the rest of the plane.
Are your parents still around?
Mm-hmm. Well, my mom is. Dad passed, yeah.
How long ago?
Like 2009.
Were y'all close?
Yeah, because first there was this thing where we never had any beef, but I didn't know how to talk to him. Then there was this article in the New Yorker, right? My mother used to bring the New Yorker home from work. And
where was work for her?
She's working in Manhattan. She's be like a nanny for like these rich people, right? So she used to take care of their
kids. My wife was a nanny.
Oh, get out of here.
Yeah.
That's hilarious. So then she's bringing the New Yorker home. And this one guy had an article about not knowing how to talk to his grandfather. But then he realized that his grandfather was his history book to his past, to his great-grandfather and the father before that, and like what life was like before he was born and the lineage of his family.
Yeah.
So then he started asking his father, his grandfather questions about just their past. So then when I would just call him up and we start talking, I just ask him questions, he would answer the questions and shit and tell me a bunch of shit. So that then, you know, when he died, I felt like I knew everything. I'd asked him. There was no regrets. I'd spoken to him enough. I didn't let not knowing how to talk to him affect me never talking to him.
Wow.
So then we spoke and so it was, and he died at an age where, like, I'd watched him and saw how he operated in life, and that had guided me to the point where I was then, and was it good enough to like keep me for the rest of my life? So it's like, wow. I couldn't be like sad when he died,
yeah,
which like you're supposed to be. I was like, I feel like I got lucky. I had a dad, he handled his business, and like, so why cry now? I cried for like 10 minutes. Then after that, it was like, and then people would call when they heard he died, and I was like, hey, what's up? How you doing? I heard your dad died. So they're talking to me with, I heard your dad died voice, but I'm responding to them like normal.
Yeah.
And they're like, wait, is this Ian? Yeah, it's Ian. I heard your dad just died. Yeah, he died.
Yeah.
And they're like, trying to like take me down to their, I'm sympathetic voice level. I'm just talking to them regular. It's like, what is there? Listen, we're all going to die.
Yeah.
So I'm not surprised he died and shit was good. So I can't be down there with you.
Right.
You know?
Man, I'm so glad you're saying that.
Mm-hmm.
This is the thing. When you lose a parent or anybody,
right,
the last thing you need is these fucking grief Nazis.
Grief Nazis.
Calling you up, and it's like, because
grief Jehovah Witnesses.
Yeah. They're like, oh, you must be in denial. It's coming around the bend. Soon you'll feel the pain. It's like, maybe not.
Yeah.
And also,
why would you wish that on me?
Yes.
Yeah.
What? Because here's your judgment now, where I guess right now to you, I'm like an insect. I'm like Jeffrey Dahmer or some shit.
Right.
Actually having a good day. Right. And my father passed away not that long ago. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I remember seeing that post. Yeah.
What's that?
I remember seeing the post when your dad passed.
Oh, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. Well, that, you know, like grief, I think it's fascinating because it's of all this, like, I don't know what you would call it, some kind of pressure release valve or something. But of all of the things, the psychic processes or whatever, like grief is wild because you'll cry. I mean, not to be a grief, not to, if you don't cry, it's great, but you'll cry again.
Yeah.
And it'll come out of left field.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's fascinating to me about it. Right, you know, I'll just be like hanging out, just doing nothing, playing Mortal Kombat. I don't know. And like, this doesn't happen all the time, but it has happened where all of a sudden I'm like, oh my God. Out of the blue, like a meteor from my subconscious comes like erupting out or something. And it's wonderful when it happens. It's like, those kinds of tears are my favorite. Grief tears are cathartic.
Do you know what you're crying about?
Oh yeah, missing them.
Okay, yeah.
It'll be a realization like, oh, I'll never feel what their hand feels like.
Right.
I'll never smell their apartment. Mm-hmm. I'll never, you know, be annoyed when they call.
Mm-hmm.
And so those moments are, but You know, I was interviewing Ram Dass, who passed recently, mm-hmm. and I was on stage at these meditation retreats that I go to.
Right.
Interviewing him, trying to come up with, like, God, talk about being a fucking phony, man. You're in front of all these spiritual people. You want them to like you, uh-huh. you know? And, like, I'm terrified of Ram Dass. It uh-huh. makes me nervous. And so you want to seem like a good person. So I'm trying to think of the right question to ask him. Uh-huh. That's a regret I have. But I remember being up there with him and being like, what are we going to do when you die?
Uh-huh.
And he looks at me and uh-huh. mocks me.
Oh, it's hilarious.
He sticks his lip out and he goes, woo, woo, woo. And this is like a guy who's had a stroke, you know, but all of a sudden he's like really animated uh-huh. in a very, very fervent way, just completely burning me up there. Because it's like, give me a fucking break. Number one, you don't really care that much about it in the way you're saying. Uh-huh. Number two, if you not listened to any of the shit I've been talking about, right. which is, you know, this is a temporary vessel right. I'm in right now. And, but I
feel like somebody had to ask that question though.
Right.
Because probably everybody else was thinking it and not saying it. And his answer right. probably gave them like some type of peace and shit.
I think so. Thank you for saying that. I do think that was like a cool, like, Matt is a great way to encapsulate.
And it's so Ram Dass, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. It was cool. But I think in our culture, we're so like death illiterate that. Like,
yeah, we act like the thing that's like so in our face every day, like the news reports death every day, but society tells us to act like it can't happen to us. And every death is such a surprise. Like, oh my God, did you hear what happened? These people died in an accident. That plane crashed. There was a natural disaster and all this. Like, this is life. Death is life, man. Yeah. This shit happens. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But we're taught to think it can't happen to us. And we're the lucky ones. We're alive. It's not a shit. This shit is real. This shit happens, you know?
It does.
Yeah.
I used to entertain the idea that I was immortal. Did you ever like play around with that? Like,
still do.
You do? Yeah. I used to do that.
As long as I'm alive, I'm gonna feel like I'm immortal.
Yeah. Why
them and not me? I must mm-hmm. be immortal.
You're the only one having this objective experience. I mean, you can't prove I'm having it. And then who knows? Maybe you are uh-huh. an eternal being having this sort of like dream experience. I mean, I like. I used to go really far with it, you know, mm-hmm. or I would like, for a little bit, I got into transhumanism and stuff and mm-hmm. like would study the research behind like prolonging life. And is mm-hmm. it old age even, maybe old age is just a disease we haven't figured right. out a cure to, and we might be able to reverse age and stuff like that. And mm-hmm. so I would imagine like, oh, you know, yeah, sure. I mean, right now, death is a possibility for me.
Right.
But in 20 years,
mm-hmm.
there might be a way to live forever. But would you want to live forever if you could?
Depends on the terms and conditions.
The one condition is this.
Mm-hmm.
You give up your right to die.
That means I can get, like, just be in the way. But not even worse, like... Well, maybe not worse, but my fear is like, say as a joke right now, I'm vegan, right? Say, and I don't know if it works, but I'm doing it. But what if it does work? And I live so long, I run out of money.
Yeah.
And then I'm homeless.
Yeah.
So how this giving up my right to die, there's a point where you can live too long. You can't afford to live too long if you're not super rich.
That's right.
Like, and I'm not at the point where I can afford to live to be 100 yet. So.
That's so fucking crazy.
You know what I'm saying?
Economically.
Economically.
You can't be immortal yet.
I can't afford to be immortal.
It's like having a baby. You're not ready to be immortal yet, man. No. You need to fucking get into
my immortality is a curse.
Oh my God. Yeah, right. Like, it's not like, sometimes I watch these, like, you know, movies about Dracula or vampires and shit, and it's like, where are you getting your money?
Right, right.
Like, are you just robbing the people you eat, but you're
they
like...
They bought Google stock when early on.
Yeah.
Or whatever, yeah.
The odds are, if you're immortal, you're going to go through long periods of being broke. But that being said, you're going to get good at shit.
Yeah, you're going to get good at shit. You're going to figure out the trends and shit, and then you should be able to financially figure shit out. Yeah.
To me, this is why... Mm-hmm. At least extending the lifespan is highly desirable because just, you know, as a comedian, I don't care. You're going to start disintegrating when you start getting older. And that's just the way it is. We've seen so many great comics. They get old.
Right.
Your body's old. You're in pain. Mm-hmm. You're shitting your pants. You're like, your mind is slowly like, you know, collapsing in on itself. But man, to see... a 500-year-old comedian who still has a young body.
Hilarious.
How funny would they be?
I don't know. They'd be like, if they were not afraid to jump off cliffs for those 500 years, they'd be the ultimate funny.
This and this right there, to me, that's the like creepy shit about, because I do think with like gene editing technology and the stuff I have read about it, I do think if they haven't already done it, which if they did do it, it might not be in their interest to tell everybody that they figured out a way to reverse the aging process.
Right.
But if they do it, that's going to be expensive, number one. Right. Like, it's if you want to reverse age, it's going to be millions of dollars.
At first, it's going to be really expensive. But then it might get cheaper, like how VCRs got cheaper. The first people had like the flat screen TVs.
Yeah.
They were like, how much you pay for that? $10,000?
Yeah.
Then they dropped down to like, everybody started getting them.
Yeah.
So then they just drop the prices down.
As soon as it's CVS.
Yeah, yeah. You can go get your anti-aging thing done at CVS or some shit.
Honey, you need to go to CVS in reverse 10 years. You're starting to look really old. Yeah. It's like a haircut. Yeah. It's like getting a haircut.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I'm going to go reverse age. Like I've put on about 10 years over the last 10 years. I need to slow down.
Over the last 10 years. I need to slow down.
Reverse it. But then... if it is expensive, what ends up happening is you will end up with an elite species of immortal beings that are experts at everything.
Right.
And then the rest of the world will be manipulated by them and controlled by them.
Just the same way it's being manipulated now by people who aren't like that. So you might as well.
But they aren't they? Yeah. The super rich.
Right.
They are kind of like, I read this thing. I'd love to know what you think about this. Are you like... not to get political. People get pissed when I get political.
I don't care.
Are you a socialist? Do you lean towards socialism, like Bernie Sanders, right. Yang, like universal?
Yeah, I like Yang.
Me too.
And I like his numbers. And why not? I just think it's funny how one side has tricked the people who need. And they use the words like, maybe they use the words like socialism and stuff to make normal shit seem bad.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And it's like, that's just a human right, you know?
You mean healthcare?
Like healthcare. Yeah, it should be.
It should be.
Yeah, it should be. Why wouldn't you want that?
Well, what do they say? The reason you don't want that? The reason you don't want that, and this is not me, P.S. Mm-hmm. This is me, like, hate watching Fox News. Uh-huh. Oh, we love sitting and watching Fox News.
Yeah, if you're smart, you should watch some Fox News.
Yeah, to see what they're saying.
See what they're saying, yeah.
So this is the idea. I think the idea, and I think the entire concept is obliterated by the existence of the military-industrial complex. Mm-hmm. You can't fucking say there's not enough money for healthcare when we're spending however much it is a day, $200 million or whatever, overseas to have bases in countries that are not America.
Right.
So you can't say there's not enough money for healthcare.
Exactly.
You could argue, well, if we don't have those bases, the entire global balance will be distorted.
What balance? We're at war anyway.
Exactly.
Exactly.
So to me, that's the thing that has always been deeply infuriating,
right,
is this sense of like, wait, there's $200 million a day that we have
a day.
Yeah, something like that.
Because I think about it in terms of like the hood, you know? And like, it's funny, I was watching an interview with Sammy the Bull Gravano, and I think he just got out of prison recently. And he was just speaking on like some of the stuff he's doing now and how the prison system is rigged against like ethnic people.
Yeah.
Like just being a guy, a white guy in jail, how you get convicted of a trial, you get accused of something, then they give you a lawyer who has 1,000 cases, and then the government has 10 lawyers, and they're determined to put you away, and then even if someone, and they can manufacture evidence, like you're playing against the house in Vegas.
Yeah.
So it's like you can't win, and the law says you're entitled to what, an attorney?
Yeah.
But that attorney can't really help you. So it's just, so you're going to lose anyway. And it just, I just had a, I forgot what the question was.
What we're talking about is basically the imbalance of power.
The imbalance of power. So it's like, you have money, like, we're spending money on prisons.
Yeah.
When that money that we're spending on prisons and for correction officers and facilities could be spent earlier on in the life of young people to show them that you love them and that you take care of them so that they don't end up feeling unloved, unwanted, and into criminals.
Yeah.
So I say, spend all this prison and rehabilitation money earlier on in their life cycle so that you won't have to spend it later on.
Right.
You know what I mean? So that's where I don't like where our funds are going.
No.
You know what I mean?
Oh, anyone who has even the slightest soul in their body,
right,
should at least scratch their chin for a second,
mm-hmm,
knowing right now,
mm-hmm,
there's somebody's mom dying of breast cancer who can't afford chemo.
Right.
And we're fucking paying money for drones to drop bombs.
Right.
On some fucking weird Iranian general.
Right.
Give me a fucking break.
Right.
And then the people ordering these things are all millionaires and shit.
Mm-hmm.
And then somewhere in there, people are like, but they love America. They don't love America. They're vampires. They're literally converting human life into dough. I mean, that's like, that's the truth of the matter. If a drone strike,
mm-hmm,
a drone strike makes Raytheon, Halliburton, DARPA, I guess, a certain amount, there's a profit margin there,
yeah,
man. You know, like, have you done any commercials?
Yeah, rarely. Yeah, like some voiceover shit.
So
yeah.
Remember, I got one commercial. I never got that sweet fucking commercial money
I
to
never
hear
got
about.
It either, yeah.
God damn, you know, these comics would book these fucking things, and every mm-hmm time the commercial ran, in the old days at least,
mm-hmm,
they'd get $10,000.
Right.
And if they got it now, you'd hear these comics, I booked a national.
A national, yeah.
And then, oh my God, every month they're getting like 50 grand just fucking mailed to their ass, mm-hmm, for doing like one day of work. And it was
right.
The dream in the old. I heard it changed a little bit.
Yeah, it changed, yeah.
But fuck, if you're a weapons manufacturer,
mm-hmm,
and you hear about a drone strike, there's a PC that's like, well, we just made a little bit of money this month.
Yeah.
We're making money.
Yeah.
You're not thinking we shouldn't kill people.
Yeah, you're making those weapons so that they get used so you could sell more weapons. So,
yeah,
like you make clothes so people will wear them. And then you make up reasons. Like, we have so many different types of clothes. We got pajamas. We got pajamas that are sexy, like lingerie.
Yeah.
So that when you go to bed and when a woman lays next to a man, he's going to do something to her.
Yeah.
Like have sex pajamas. Then there's work clothes, and there's different types of work clothes. And then there's hiking clothes, and there's yoga outfits, and then there's suits. And then so it's like, but you always, if you make these things, you make up a reason why people should wear these things.
Sure.
So if you make weapons, you're going to make up a reason why people should use these weapons. You ain't making them just, if they just buy them and never use them, then they'll stop buying them. So you, anybody that's selling weapons is doing some shit to make people use those weapons.
Oh man, that's the dark, dark thought that I try to avoid. Mm-hmm. I had a fucking Uber driver say this mm-hmm to me. if you're making umbrellas, you need it to rain.
Yeah.
And it's like, fuck, this shit is like so, it's so unreal to me to imagine that there are people in the world that are so insanely greedy.
Right.
That they would want to perpetuate war infinitely to make money.
Oh, yeah, they're there.
And yet they exist.
Yeah.
And we let them live.
Yeah.
You know, like in Dracula movies, Frankenstein movies, they surround the castle with the torches.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Set you, that would happen to you. It's like if you were doing this shit, the villagers set you on fire.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, we're just like, yeah, that's just, you know, that's what the vampire does.
Because we have a certain level of comfort that as long as it doesn't affect us, like we're numbed by our own comfort.
Right.
And we're like, that's not happening to us. But like, this is, some guy said this, you know, this is, and I wish everybody heard this. Yeah, and I think he's like a black sports journalist, right? And he was like, hey man, like if you're some rich non-black person, right? And I think cancer or any disease is a good equalizer just because of this. So say you don't care about the poor segment of society and you don't mind them going in and out of jail and having ruined lives because you can make money off that. You know what I mean? But say you're rich your whole life, but one of the equalizing factors is death and uncertainty of it, when it's going to happen. You can get any sickness, any illness, any disease. Do you know, rich person, that somebody who's in jail right now, if they had the great upbringing and had not been oppressed, they could have come up for the cure for whatever you're going to die of, or a relative who's close to you is going to die of. So you think you're getting away unscathed, but you're hurting yourself by hurting other people. Holy, and that's how connected we are.
Shit.
You know what I mean?
That is the craziest. Fuck.
And then he said that. I was like, oh, shit. That is true. So it's like, we all need each other, you know?
Yeah.
But we just selfish. Like, that's why death is great. You know what I'm saying? Or some unforeseen illness is great, because you can't get away from it until people start making these connections and realizing what they're doing to other people to hurt them eventually comes back to hurt you. You know, they won't get that shit.
There's the Ram Dass Foundation is called Love, Serve, Remember.
Mm-hmm.
In the remember part, they say remember God, but I've heard it actually, remember you're going to die. So that's their motto. Love everybody, serve everybody, and remember you're going to die.
Uh-huh.
Because if you forget that, you will become the biggest fucking asshole on planet Earth.
Right.
And the fact that these bastards have forgotten the fact that every single many of the great things that come into this world do not come from a predicted source.
Right.
They don't come from they're not coming from the fucking Ivy League trust fund babies all the time. And this is why I love the Christian story. Because this is a manger situation. You know what I mean? This thing pops up in the middle of a barn.
Right.
And it's the hope of the world.
Right.
And sometimes, this is when I'm definitely eating too much weed. Sometimes I think, oh, actually, that's not a mistake.
Right.
They don't want things to get better. They don't want a hope of the world. They want to get into the places where there's the highest likelihood of some kind of novel idea.
Mm-hmm.
And how many times have you like heard the story? And it does happen, man. There are comics I know who are brilliantly funny, who had wealthy upbringings.
Right.
But more often than not, that is not the way it works.
Right.
And so if one of the fundamental, seemingly universal things that, you know, if you're, you know, we want to grow carrots, there's a certain way where they're going to grow.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to grow wine country.
Right.
Want to grow fucking, you know, great minds, adversity, unfortunately, right? So if we start making it so the adversity is imprisoning people, destroying their consciousness, turning them into survivors.
Yeah, occupying their mind with survival, then they can't use their mind to just create and do things, you know what I mean?
Dude, It's almost like if you were a reptile alien taking over the planet, mm-hmm. it would just be standard. Like, go, well, you need to start putting the poor people in jail.
Right.
Because they come up with ideas. You need to imprison. The first step in conquering any planet is immediately get as many poor people imprisoned or dead as you possibly can. You don't want socialism because mm-hmm. you need them to die. Because otherwise, if you let them live too long, what are you going to get? A fucking car? You want a Karl Marx? You want another Jesus? You want another Gandhi? Do you see how bad Gandhi fucked things up for us? You want another Martin Luther King? Is that what you want? No. You want sheep that yeah. you can suck their life energy off of so we can live forever.
Right, right. Yeah, they're definitely like vampiring us. You know what I mean? Like we're just, it's almost, that's why the Matrix hit so hard when it did. Because it's like, oh shit, like batteries that they're just feeding off and shit until, yeah. you know.
Until what?
Until they're just more, they just don't care. You throw out the old batteries. Just wait till the new ones come in. People are going to be born and they just keep it moving.
Man, this is truly the I think, one of the grim realities mm-hmm. until, man, I remember I had this guy, Rick Doblin, on my podcast, mm-hmm. who is the guy doing the MDMA studies with people who have PTSD. Uh-huh. And I was raging against the machine with him. I think I was talking about the FDA maybe, or I don't remember. Uh-huh. I was really bitching about it. And this is a guy who went to the Pentagon mm-hmm. and like met with generals, and he somehow managed to get the insane, you know, viewpoint of the United States when it comes to psychoactive drugs uh-huh. to change enough to at least allow the studies to happen, which are now, you know, having a lot of great results. And mm-hmm. the thing he said to me was really fucking unnerving. He's like, no, they're not all bad up there. Mm. And then, and you know what I mean? So now it's like, where is the evil? Where's the vampire? The system itself seems to be more like...
Some people are just brainwashed too and they're unaware until like, Something close to them happens to them, and then he goes up there and speaks to them, and then you know, like a lot of people in that lifestyle, some of them, like, they believe in the American system the way it was taught to them, and they've succeeded listening to it, so there's no reason to doubt it or to think that they're right. wrong or that they've been doing anything wrong. You know what I mean?
It hasn't even, it's like, it hasn't yeah. flickered across their fucking screen.
Yeah, exactly. It hasn't occurred to them. Like, nah, those people, they fucked up. They made those choices, but you haven't seen the positions they were put in. They were put in a survival mode. And when you're in survival mode, like if you're born in the jungle, man, you learn how to kill lions and shit like that. But if you're in America, you're like, hey man, the lion population is down. You can't be killing lions like that. You know what I mean? But you're not, the lions ain't walking next to your goddamn tent.
Yeah, no shit.
You know what I'm saying?
You're going to tell me not to kill lions?
You're going to tell me not to kill lions. Like, so it's like,
right.
And then you're occupied with like trying to not being killed with a lion. You can't create or do anything or come up with nothing. You're just constantly under survival pressure. And this is why we made the world it was. So you could have time to create. So you'd be in a house, you'd be protected, and there's water and there's electricity.
Yeah.
And people who have that can think and come up with other shit.
Yeah.
And the people that don't have that stay in survival mode.
And they keep the prisons mm-hmm. as chaotic as they possibly fucking can, because mm-hmm. otherwise the prisons will become that house. They'll become like, if you were to do like the way Sweden, their mm-hmm. prisons look like dormitories.
Right.
They truly want to rehabilitate the prisoners.
True. Yeah, yeah.
They're trying to make it so they don't kill people anymore mm-hmm. for real.
Yeah.
And they have a very low recidivism rate.
Right.
But if we did that here, then the prisons would become monasteries or something. They would become places where people would begin to write great poetry.
Right.
And not that it's not happening now in prisons, right. and there's a lot. Do you ever think about doing, do you do any kind of like volunteer work? Like I always think if I was going to do volunteer work, mm-hmm. it would be some kind of prison outreach or something.
I've done like once, like Tosh has like, he'll say, hey, you want to do a charity show? Like we're doing it for free.
Yeah.
But then every comic on the show gets to pick a charity where they want to donate the That's money cool. to, their money to.
Yeah.
So I'll do like the Innocence Program.
Is that a prison?
Yeah, it's like where, you know, it goes to a fund, and there's these lawyers in the innocence program. I hope I'm saying where they try to get people who are already convicted and in jail for a long time. If they believe that they're innocent, you know, they keep on appealing and trying their cases and trying to get them out of jail.
Wow.
You know what I mean? If they feel like this is what went wrong in this case, you know, and so this is why we believe this person didn't do it, you know, then they try to do that.
That's cool.
Yeah, but I don't do it enough. I need to like stay on that. That's like my main cause, if any cause, you know what I mean?
I think it's one of the great causes. Mm-hmm. People are in fucking dungeons, man.
Yeah, man.
They're in dungeons. A lot of them are in dungeons and they did do a crime, but the crime mm-hmm. isn't even a real fucking crime.
Right, exactly.
They're just selling acid.
Yeah.
At a Grateful Dead show, and they're in there for 50 life sentences straight.
It's crazy, right?
Southern fucking judge was like, yeah. You're trying to drop it in the water supply, hippie.
Yeah, they make up, like, I like when the judicial system makes up a motive for you. And you're like, yeah. What? I wasn't even thinking of doing that. Are you out of your mind?
Are you out of your mind?
Yeah.
But no, they're not. They're just like their friends run the prison. They need to keep them stopped.
Oh, yeah.
Good God. Yeah. This got dark and awesome. But before we wrap up.
He said dark and awesome.
I love it, man. Why don't we just start milking them? Why don't we just admit what we're doing? Herd people into prisons and start juicing them their stem cells.
I mean, it's a version of basically what they're doing.
It's a version, yeah. But you got to make it seem like it's not. Otherwise, people get mad.
Exactly.
If we were, if the prisons look like fucking dairy farms where the prisoners just had weird tubes attached to their dicks and nipples that were sucking their life essence that rich people were drinking, we'd shut down prisons in a day.
Yeah, every time they're making a phone call or something, you're milking them or buying getting something from the commissary or
$30 a minute to talk to your son.
I'm in jail. This is how I got here. I was broke. I did. How am I going to pay $30?
Yeah.
So crazy.
I had an ounce of fucking marijuana in my backpack, and now my son doesn't have a dad.
How am I in jail for this and you ain't in jail for what? You're charging me for a phone call.
Well,
yeah, it's crazy.
I'm glad you asked that question, prisoner. Now back to the milking room. Tell me about your special. Bill Burr, this is the one Bill Burr?
This is the one Bill Burr.
How did that happen? I mean, fuck, that's incredible, man. How did that phone, was it a phone call or a chat, or how did that originate?
So Bill got a deal from Comedy Central to produce 3 specials. For some crazy reason, he hits me up.
Yeah.
First, my agent hit me up. Because I think, I'm not the same agent, but my agent hit me up, said Bill wants to give me one of the specials. And I was like, and I was going to shoot a special. I was going to use my own money. We were looking at venues with the same guy who directed this special, which is cool because Aristotle, a theorist, directed my special. But he was like, before that, he was like, you should have a special. I agreed with him. So, excuse me. I was just going to use my money and shoot it. And then, you know, just putting that shit into action and taking the steps and Bill getting the deal and then Bill being able to offer me money and me not having to spend my own money and it having a location like Comedy Central just worked out.
Beautiful.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, man. But like, to me, I do get like paying for your own special in the sense you own them. That's your IP.
And that's what I liked about it.
Yeah.
And that's what I still, even though I'm happy it was on Comedy Central, I still like want to own my shit more than it being on Comedy Central or even somewhere else. Unless they're going to pay me so much, I don't have to worry about owning it. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah, right. That's, and also, you know, I don't know how much, I guess did they put it on YouTube or did they put it online or anything like that? How accessible is it?
It's at comedycentral.com, but Comedy Central's like website is not the greatest and their app ain't the greatest.
Right.
So only people in America that have Comedy Central, whether the app or maybe somewhere on Amazon and maybe Hulu now, you can watch it.
When I haven't seen it yet, I was reading about it and it said it's like a TED Talk.
Is that
true? So this is it's not traditional stand up. It's more.
Well, it is. But when you look at stand up, like depending on the type of stand up you are explaining something, right? You are explaining something, and you're giving your, like a TED Talk is like somebody's perspective on something or a new idea on something. So I just presented the same jokes, but in a TED Talk format. You know what I'm saying?
That's fucking rad.
Yeah, yeah.
Man, if you can, to me, you know, I think that is an emerging form in comedy right now, is figuring out a way to, in a funny way, also be like informational, you know, not just like, you know, all good stand-up is like that. But I do love that, that approach to it, man. That's cool. I always like fantasize about that. Like, fuck, you know, I really do want to talk about Buddhism on stage.
Right.
But I have no idea how to make it funny. I have no idea how to work it out where it doesn't sound preachy.
Just do, so I get caught up in stuff that I'm passionate about. And then I would say, oh, just let me just do a one-liner about it first. So you just do it a one-liner at a time. And then you add a tag to that one-liner, then another tag. And then it turns into the bit. Like, if you try to make the whole bit, then it's going to be preachy. But just make the first single joke about it, and then tag it, and then tag it, and then you build a whole. Then you get to say what you want. But I think sometimes when we sit down to write, we're trying to do this whole thing, and it's just, you just got to simplify that shit.
Very Buddhist of you to say, by the way. Yeah. Thank you very much.
My pleasure, fam.
Man, this was a joy. Thank you.
Same here, brother.
Thanks for coming here.
And my pleasure.
Please let people know where to find you.
On Instagram at Ian Edwards Comic, on Twitter at Ian Edwards Comic, on Facebook, just type in Ian Edwards, and on my website is ianedwardscomedian.com.
All the links you need to find Ian will be at drtrussell.com. Thank you, man.
Hare Krishna. Thank you, fam.
Much thanks to Ian Edwards for coming on this episode of the DTFH. All the links you need to find Ian are going to be at drtrussell.com. And thank you, Squarespace, for sponsoring us. And thank you for listening to the DTFH. If you like us, subscribe to us somewhere. Give us a like. Leave a nice review on iTunes. I'll see you next week. Until then, Hare Krishna.